into sports.
20 yards out, Urs to shoot, don't shoot! Oh, what a goal from Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No, I'm...
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap.
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports. Ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Now then, you're welcome back. Always good to say Jack Byrne is with us of Shamrock Rovers and the Republic of Ireland. Jack, how you doing? How's things?
How are you doing? You okay?
Yeah, very well. I was just thinking, I was checking with the lads. The last time I spoke to you, you were in studio. Myself and Damien Delaney were here. That was October last year. It's been some year.
It has, yeah. It's been some year. Probably a year I never expected. And look, I remember coming in to the studio after the Ireland game, and you know, obviously was buzzing at the time, and still look back now, great memories.
So one of the reasons we're talking to you is that you've linked up with Coca-Cola HBC. They've launched a special youth empowered program, and this is designed to support young people disproportionately affected by COVID-19. One of the things it does, it provides 18 to 30-year-olds with free and unlimited access to a range of online resources, includes insights from guest speakers like yourself. And for more information, people can check out coca-colahellenic.com or hashtag youth empowered. So what kind of things are you talking about?
Yeah, it's really good. It's just, you know, focusing on, you know, obviously the Youth Empowered program and, you know, giving young kids an opportunity to if they are struggling, and it's a good program that they can go online and they can go and check it out, and hopefully it helps a lot of people.
Do you give examples from your own career?
Yeah, I do. I speak about, you know, times when I haven't always been doing so well, and you know, the resilience you need to you know, play a professional sport, and talk about, you know, going away from home at a young age, and you know, how I dealt with that, and look, hopefully if we can reach, you know, even one or two people and it can help them, then it's definitely worthwhile.
What was the low point, or what was the toughest part in your career thus far, Jack?
It was probably, you know, making the decision to come home and you know, having to deal with people saying, you know, he's throwing it away, and you know, he's not good enough to play in England. He doesn't have the mentality, and you know, people are always looking for a stick to hit you with. And you know, it was really difficult around that time. But you know, I had to show a lot of character to really bounce back from that situation, because you know, there were certain times when it did get on top of me, and you know, I felt like, do I even want to play this game? But you know, when I got home, and you know, I surrounded myself with good people, good family, you know, it gave me a chance to really kick on again and focus on what was important.
Did you feel when you came home to Dublin that you were chucking in the towel a bit, or you were throwing it away, or you were giving up a touch? Like, did you lack motivation at that stage? Were you ready to kind of ditch the towel and look, we'll see what happens with Rovers, but I'm not sure my heart's in this anymore? That's where you were.
Do you know what? I was and I wasn't. I was in a place where, you know, I knew over there if I was bouncing around from club to club and in League One and trying to nick a move for 16 months or you know, 2 year deals, it wasn't gonna work out for me at the time. So, you know, I needed to come home, and when I spoke to the manager here, I never really got that feeling that I was trying to tell him. I seen it as if, you know, somebody who believed in me and someone who really wanted to you know, give me a chance to show people in this country, you know, how good a footballer I was. And you know, he obviously gave me the platform to go on and make me international career. It was only, you know, a month and a half into the season when I got my first international call up by Mick. So well, things can change quickly, and I think if you stick through these things and you battle through them, you can see not only in life, in football, things can change so quickly.
So quickly, yeah, for sure. Milan 2, Shamrock Rovers 0. I guess that's, you know, it's nice to have played against Milan. To say the least. I didn't get to see the game. I was listening to radio commentary at one point. By all accounts, you played very well. Were you happy with your own performance?
Yeah, I think, look, we are, I think that as a team, we were happy, like, you know, competing with one of the best sides in European football over the years, and to go up against them, you know, probably a bit gutting that we couldn't go a second leg over in the San Siro. But look, obviously, nobody would have, you know, seen what's happened in the world over the last couple of months. So look, we take that one on the chin, but you know, my own performance, yeah, I was happy. I thought I'd done okay, and you know, for the times when we had the ball, I thought as a team we moved well, and you know, we never changed, we never went away from what we're good at, and I don't think as a team we can change. I think we have to play that way. So, you know, it's important for us, no matter whether we're playing against, you know, Waterford on Monday night or Milan on Thursday, that you know, we see what we're good at and the way the manager has set us up.
I heard a few of your teammates in defence talking about Zlatan, and they could just sense the quality, be it his movement or his touch or his strength. I mean, I would imagine even when you're seeing him in person, he's even bigger than you might expect. He looks like a specimen. Did anything strike you about his play being on the same pitch as him?
Yeah, I just thought, you know, for a 38-year-old, his movement was unbelievable. I think he still had, you know, so much legs, and he was getting around the pitch, and he was dictating the game at one point from the middle of the park. He was just dropping in, and he's obviously unbelievable footballer. He's played for the best clubs in the world, and he still feels as if he has a lot to offer, and I'm sure he does. But judging by the performance from playing against him the other night, I think he could go for another couple of years. But the fella is obviously looks after himself so well. He was doing crazy kicks over the height of my head during the warm up. So. He's obviously fit and ready to rock into the new season. And look, he's obviously started well anyway with a goal against us, even though I'm not happy about it.
What's he doing in his movement?
He's for such a big man, he was like a ghost on the pitch. You couldn't pick him up. His movement for this goal was fantastic. I thought he just ghosted in the back of Pico at one stage. But look, saying that, I thought Pico had a great game, you know, but. That's just what top players do. You keep them quiet for the whole game, and you know, they pop up in one moment. But we just thought throughout the game, we thought he was brilliant the way he was just dictating the game, and you know, not even by he never once ran himself out of the game. He always looked fresh, even when they didn't have the ball. He never looked like he was blown.
Do you suspect that kind of movement is learned and taught, or is there something innate in the way he sees the game?
I think from such a young age, he was so good. So I think it's a natural gift that he has, that, you know, he can move so well for a big man, and his touch is so good. And, you know, but then obviously going through top clubs, it's not enough, and you have to add other little parts to your games and what would our managers want you to do. And he's obviously done that over the years. You know, we think his records speak for itself and the clubs he's played for, but I think he's probably got better as he's gone along with, you know, experience.
Was he mouthy on the pitch? Was he loud?
I think he was giving a few of the lads a little bit, but you don't mind that, you know. I mean, it made it competitive. It made it, you know, they weren't taking us lightly. They were, you know, they were right up for the game. They pressed us. They played the game properly. We played the game properly. We couldn't have a minute off, because they have quality to go and hit you for six or seven if you do. So, look, we probably played at our best, although we're disappointed with the goals we conceded. You know, us playing at our best and them being bang at it, they beat us 2-0, and obviously we're disappointed about it, but like, it's not the worst result in the world and not the worst performance, and we took a lot of pride out of it. But you know, if you take 1 minute off against them, you know, they were bang at it on the night, and we had to work really hard for the 2-0 defeat, really.
Sure, look, you're mouthy on the pitch as well. I mean, half the time I'd be worried about you on the pitch if you were quiet. I think you need it to be in the game and in a certain state.
Yeah, I think so. Like, I think I'm probably better when I play when I'm angry. Look, I think I need to do certain things sometimes to get myself up for games. I can't just go out on the pitch and prance about, because if I don't play at a tempo, I may as well not be on the pitch. It may as well be carrying me. So we need to do something to get me up for the game, whether that's moaning at myself half of the time or saying something to somebody to kind of, you know, light me fire. I think that's what I need to do, because I seem to get the best out of myself when I have something to play for.
generally, so Zlatan aside, and you know, you use that phrase, if you switch off for a moment, they'll punish you. Just in general play, what are the biggest areas where there's a gap? You know, if we're talking about Irish football and clubs like Shamrock Rovers hoping or aspiring to play at some kind of European level regularly and successfully, is it physicality? Is it touch? Is it game awareness? You know, you're probably going to tell me it's a bit of everything, but if there was something that jumped out, having played against them recently.
It's hard to say, like, you know, because there's a gap everywhere. There's a gap between most teams. You know, Man City will go away and play Napoli and they'll beat them 2 or 3-0, and you'll say there's a gap between them. What do they need to do to bridge that gap? So it's a difficult one to say. Like, you see the gap between the top half of the Premier League half of the time and the bottom half of the Premier League is so big. But I just think for our league in general, I think the more, you know, young players we have coming in, hungry young players, the more high quality games we have, you know, the more times the better teams play against each other, I think will benefit the league, whether it will definitely benefit the top teams going for Europe. I thought the idea of Bowes, Derry, you know, Shamrock Rovers and Dundalk playing in the Aviva was a great idea to get teams ready, because it was high tempo, high quality football. The way the European games would have been played, with that kind of feel around it. I think the more games you have like that will only benefit the league going forward. I think, I think up in Scotland, the way they kind of cut the league after Christmas, I think it is, and the top teams seem to play each other more often than not. I think that would, you know, maybe benefit us here.
It's interesting you were able, while still playing in the game, to appreciate what Zlatan was doing. I was reading recently Wayne Rooney's column in the Sunday Times. It's always really good. And he was talking about growing up, and he used to watch VHS tapes of Yari Litmanen to learn the role, and he modelled himself and his movement on the things he saw Litmanen doing. Do you go in for any of that? Is there anybody that you did or do model yourself on at times?
Well, always growing up, like Paul Scholes, always, you know, loved watching him play. I don't model myself on him because I've moved higher up the pitch now. I play in the number 10 position. But when I first went over to England, I used to play in front of the back four. And that first year in Holland, I would have played, you know, a lot of time in midfield, building from the back and through the towards. So I always enjoyed watching Paul Scholes' performances. I just thought he was unbelievable. He never gave a pass away, and it was never the safety option as well with him. He was always, you know, trying to find the killer pass. And I just thought, I remember going to watch a game, I think there's, you know, always a piece going around about when Scholes played this game against Man City, his fourth game after a tournament, when he had the fake boots on. And he went to Sports Direct or something and got a pair of fake boots and went down to play the game. And I don't think he gave the ball away. He was unbelievable. I was in the Etihad watching the game. And I remember coming away from the game thinking, this fella is a different level. I don't think he made a tackle. I don't think he made a header. He was just everywhere. He was just there in front of everyone. So that's probably my favourite player watching when I was growing up was Paul Scholes. And still to this day, you get him up on the old YouTube. But it's in black and white.
Yeah, we're all getting old. Did you ever get along to Old Trafford when you were in Manchester to watch him, or was that like, would that be dangerous territory to sneak along?
Do you know, I used to try and get some of the Champions League games if they were playing. Like, you know, sometimes you get to see them. You know, some of my family would be United fans, and they go over and watch the games, and you just tag along with them for something to do. And I actually went, and I used to go and watch a lot of reserve team games in Old Trafford, watch Derek Williams and Robbie Brady play against each other. One time I was there with Graham, and I think there was a few of them playing on the pitch that day. Samir Carruthers, Graham Bourke, Derek Williams, Robbie Brady, I think Grealish might have played. So there was some good players, and players that we've been playing with throughout the age groups. And when they're playing on your doorstep, you'll always go and, you know, see how they're getting on, and, you know, offer a bit of support if you can, because it's probably only a few of us over there.
There must have been some unbelievable players you saw, say, even just take the two Manchester clubs, who didn't make it, like high profile brilliant youth players who never kicked on. I don't know, did any jump to mind, or were any in your age group?
Do you know what, it's difficult to say, because there's been so many I've come across so many in my time, and you know, even ones when you're looking at lads when they're 12, 13, 14, and you know, you just don't know how to, like, at the time you're thinking these lads are going to be, you know, the next big thing, and then 2 or 3 years later, you don't see them in the academy anymore. You're thinking, where are these boys gone? So it's difficult, but you know, you always have the Phil Fodens and, you know, the Brahim Diazes who used to, you know, play up with us, and we'd be watching them, you know, their clips used to be going around the academy when we were younger, and you'd see some of the stuff they were doing, and you'd be thinking, these boys are different gravy, and they're the ones that have obviously kicked on and done really well. But saying most of the lads out of my Man City U team would have had careers out of the game, I don't think any of them aren't playing. I think most of them are still, you know, they found their level and probably could play higher, but probably got bogged down in the, you know, coming from an academy team that are winning, you know, 4-5-0 every week and, you know, passing the ball and doing really well under Vieira to go on and playing for Walsall in League One. And it's a battle in your hands and it's completely different. So, you know, some people fall out of the game or just slide down the ladder that don't deserve to be there. And, you know, if you go and you watch a game in League One or League Two, no surprise that there's always one or two players that you think, my God, he shouldn't be playing there, you know, and it's just that bit of luck that you need with a manager. You see, you know, plenty of teams, Luton, I think, back-to-back promotions, Sheffield United, back-to-back promotions to the Premier League. So some of these boys playing in League One soon start to mix it in the Premier League, you know, so it's just one of those things. But most of the lads that you know, we've played with are still in the game and still doing really well.
Ravel Morrison wasn't around your vintage, was he?
He was. I would have played against him. I played against him when I was younger in the reserves. But, you know, we would have been in the same U team as Paul Pogba and, you know, all these boys. And I've heard stories about him saying that, you know, he was obviously, you know, the one that probably got away. But to be honest, when we played against him, Ryan Tunnicliffe was probably a better player and he's playing for Luton now. So,
right.
You know, and I played with Ryan that weekend and he's a good player, but, you know, there's always, everyone will have their own opinion. He can do unbelievable stuff with the ball, Ravel, when you watch him. But, you know, I think in a 90-minute game, for me, I didn't think he was, you know, going to be better than the Pogba's that were playing beside him.
And was Pogba just evidently, clearly class and just going to make it?
Yeah, he was. He was quality. You know, we used to play him in the Manchester Senior Cup. You know, I think it would have been only 15 going up watching the reserves. Ian Lawler would have been playing against him, and he was a proper player. He had everything. Like, and there's no surprise that Juventus took him. I think a year or two later, and stuck him straight in their first team when they knew he wasn't going to play for Man United. You have to be some player to go over there and play straight away. You know, so he was kind of like Olivier Encham, who was at Man City with me, who's now at Celtic. He was bigger and stronger, a lot more physically developed than me at the time, who wasn't probably going to peak and ever have a chance to play first team football until I was 19 or 20. These boys could have played from the time they were 15 or 16.
You know, that academy style of football, how does that compare to when you get to senior football and the pressure? Because sometimes it's accused of being, you know, you're just almost a bit too perfect in the centre half split, and, you know, there's nothing on the line in terms of people's livelihoods if we get relegated, and just that cut and thrust. How does academy football and lads who shine in that environment compare to what you might have experienced in at senior level?
I don't agree with it completely when people say that, because, you know, there's still lads that you're playing academy football, you're still fighting for your jersey, you're still fighting to get into it, you know, a Man City's first team, or you're still fighting to get another contract. If you're not at it every week, or, you know, you're not playing well and you're not going to move up the ranks, you're not going to get into your first team at the end of the day, and you're not going to earn a living. So now a lot of these boys that would leave, you know, school and go to academy graduates and not have great educations, and, you know, you haven't got a lot to fall back on. So, you know, for me, when I was playing academy football, I was thinking, I'm going to get in the first team. I want to be better than the person who would have signed from Real Madrid for $5 million, who was playing beside me. Do you know what I mean? I was thinking, this is, you know, I need to be at it every week, otherwise I won't get a game for Man City's under 18s. How am I going to go and play anywhere else? So I don't agree with it 100%, but I do understand when people are coming from, kids might get, you know, too much too soon, and they might get, you know, a false, you know, sense of security. And, you know, I can understand that. And I do feel sorry for some of the kids that happens to, because, you know, I've seen it a lot. Kids get a lot of money and they don't, might not have great family around them, and, you know, might not be spent wisely. And then in a couple of years, you see them and, you know, they're not playing football anymore. And you're thinking, you know, what's going on there? And I hope the kid has good people around them, because it's you need that when you know you get the 19, 20 years of age and there's another 16-year-old coming through and you're not going to break into the first team, they soon give that 16-year-old a chance ahead of you.
Yeah, there's just so much talent out there. Was anybody in the City first team good to you or encouraging to you or took time out to help you along?
There was a lot. Like, we used to have, say, Carlos Tevez when he was frozen out of first team. He used to train with us, you know, for that whole 6 or 7 months when he had that argument with Mancini. And, you know, even not speaking English and stuff, just training with them players every day, learning from them when we were only, was only 15, like, you know. And this Carlos Tevez, one of the best players, one of the best strikers in the world. Obviously, he was frozen out at the time. But, you know, obviously, there's a lot of people that are good to you and they help you out. Gareth Barry, when I first went over, he came down, met the whole family, spent a good few hours with us around the training ground. You know, when you're going up training with them, all the lads are always sound. I remember when I was training with the squad for the first, one of the first Champions League squads that was kind of in and around with the U Champions League, and you go up and train with the first then, and you know, Willie Caballero would have been brilliant to us. He would have been so good, one of the best, and you know, could not speak a lot of English. So it's not really the English speaking lads or anything like that. It was just, there was always, you know, people looking out for you. And you know, I think they always just, once you had respect them and once you tried hard and worked hard, I think most of them, you just get along with them.
I got to say, I sort of forget some of the quality that you've been around. You know, 15 years old training with Carlos Tevez is nuts.
Yeah, no, it was. Yeah, we had some good players in that bomb squad, I'll call it. But I think Owen Hargreaves was there, and you know, Boyata, and there was some good players, to be fair.
Yeah, Hargreaves at that point, I presume his knees were just, it was dreadful what happened to him. I mean, he was such a brilliant player.
If he couldn't get near the force, then how could any of us?
I guess you're probably a bit disappointed looking on the Bulgaria and the Finland games. I understand reading that Stephen Kenny had a chat with you. What was the gist of the message?
Just, you know, he didn't want to play a number 10 in the games, and you know, just said it wasn't out of his plans. This was just the squad he was going to go with for the games. And look, I respect that, and that's not a problem. I know the it's a hard job for anyone to pick a squad of 23 players. This time 18 months ago, if you had told me, I would have been, you know, near the squad. You know, I would have laughed at you. I would have bit your hand off. So to be getting a phone call off Stephen, and you know, probably come away from the phone call a bit disappointed that you're not in the squad. Mm. You know, for me, it wasn't a disappointment. It was a, you know, I know I can do better, and I know I can try and do better, and I can try and improve. And you know, I think we can only take positives out of it, because I've gone on and I've done well now since the squad you know, was announced, and since I probably did need a little bit of a, you know, kick up my own backside really, and you know, knuckle down again. Mm. Not to say I wasn't trying, but I just probably wasn't playing as well as I could have been playing. And you know, we think of I've got a few games under my legs now. I didn't have a great pre-season. I didn't play a game in pre-season, so
right.
And we've got the games under my legs now, and you know, I just hopefully you know, whether I'm in the squad or not in the squad, the next one, hopefully the lads can go and do well, because you know, I was obviously involved last year, and I would like to see, obviously as a fan as well, I'd like to see Ireland qualify no matter whether I'm in it or not. So obviously disappointing looking on when they played against Bulgaria that I wasn't involved, because obviously thought I'd done well against them the last time I played, and you know, probably thought I could have affected it, but you know, it's not really a big issue for me. I just need to concentrate on what I'm doing.
Yeah, no, I'd say Bulgaria in particular, because I mean, you were brilliant that night, you know, and changed the game, and I kind of thought, well, this guy's going to be a fixture in the squad going forward almost automatically. And are you in your own head, you're just definitely a number 10, you know, or you know, if the team shape was such that, well, actually, could you play sitting role or play a bit deeper, given that you've done it before, over in Holland, I think, in particular, is that something you kind of closed the door on, or do you feel, I just want to be a number 10, I'm definitely a 10?
Oh, I think I could play, you know, all across the midfield. I probably played, you know, a full season in League One playing right midfield when I was playing an Oldham team that, you know, we didn't play great football, but it got me in areas of the pitch up beside Owen Doyle where I could affect them. We had, you know, two workhorses in the middle of the park. So it just, I don't know, you just different teams, different styles, different managers' opinions on where they see you playing. And, you know, you just take it from there. If you're told to play on the left, you're told to play on the right, or you're told to play in goal, you just go and do it. And that's what your manager wants you to do. And, you know, I probably wouldn't have done it years ago. I probably would have, you know, laughed at you and said, oh, no, I only want to play here. I want to play there. But, you know, you get old and you get more wiser, and, you know, manager tells you to go and play in goal, you go and play in goal. And that's just the way it is.
Mm. You sound like you have matured a lot, all right.
Yeah, it's just, you know, we've been through a hell of a lot in my career. You know, I've played loads of clubs and got myself in situations that would I get myself in them situations now looking back, you know, certainly not. And will I get myself in them situations going forward? No, I won't. So look, hindsight is a great thing, and you know, you can only learn these things when you go through them. And you know, the stuff I went through at 18, I don't think, you know, any kid would have went through from the time they were, you know, 11 to 18. And you know, I think I've definitely learned from it, and, you know, we'll come out stronger, no doubt.
Final point, it'd be remiss of me not to mention, things are going very well, obviously, with Rovers. 8 points clear, 6 games to go, so I would think that's very much the focus now, win a league title and you know, finally get that done. That's where the head's at very much at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. I think, you know, it's an old cliche, just take it one game at a time, but now, I think that's what we have to do. But, you know, we would be lying if we said, you know, we don't know that we're 8 points clear at the top of the table and there's only 6 games left to go. And we're obviously aware of our position and, you know, how hard we've worked to get in this position. And it's up to us now not to let anybody take it from us and nail it home. And, you know, it'd be a good end to the season and, you know, hopefully we can do it.
Well, listen, keep it going. Hopefully we see you in a green jersey again very soon. Jack Byrne, with thanks to Coca-Cola and their youth impaired program, Coca-Cola-Hellenic.com, or hashtag youth empowered is where you can check out more info and maybe check out Jack's contribution as well. Listen, pleasure, sir. Take care. We'll talk to you soon. Cheers.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
Football on Off the Ball
with Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunluey.net.
Now, you're welcome back. I'll bring you up to date on the Carabao Cup. So, Newcastle 7-0 up away to Morecambe. These games all about to go full-time. Arsenal 2-0 up away to Leicester. That was nil all for a long time, that game, but Arsenal have made the breakthrough. So, 2-0 up with moments to go. Everton 5, Fleetwood Town 2. There's been a lot of 5-2s, it feels like, lately. Everton 5, Fleetwood Town 2. Chelsea then at home to Barnsley, 6-0 winners, Chelsea this evening. Kai Havertz scored his first goal for the club this evening. And then the full times, Troy Parrott played 45 minutes for Millwall. If you're interested, they were beaten 2-0 by Burnley though. Fulham beat Sheffield Wednesday by 2-0. Stoke were 1-0 winners at home to Gillingham. And Brighton, 2-0 winners away to Preston. Very happy to say we're joined by Dominic Fifield from The Athletic. Keeps a close eye on London football in particular. Dominic, great to have you with us. How you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, very well. A few bits and bobs we wanted to touch on. First of all, drama last night. David Moyes and a couple of players as well. Josh Cullen, Issa Diop, all testing positive. Seemingly all asymptomatic, had no idea themselves. This is the reality we're living in. It's, I would say, promising, you know, in light of the Spurs Leighton Orient game, promising at least that the game did go ahead and we're, you know, they're finding ways to get things done with positive tests here and there.
I guess that's one way of looking at it. Yeah, I was quite surprised that they carried on with the fixture, not least because they only discovered when David Moyes and the two players were actually at the stadium on the evening of the game. So presumably they had been in quite close proximity to members of their own team, possibly the opposition as well. And Hull City, who were the visitors at the London Stadium, actually declined the offer of taking COVID tests. They stuck with sort of EFL guidelines and opted against that. And you know, the more you hear that happening, you start wondering whether these clubs actually want to know whether they've got it or not, because the implications as Leighton Orient show, the implications of losing a fixture or potentially a few fixtures when half your squad goes down with the virus are pretty serious as well financially. So it's just you're right, we have to live with this and we have to work out how we get through it all, but it felt unsatisfactory last night.
No, you make a fair point. I hadn't realised it was that, in such proximity to kickoff, actually.
Yeah, it was. Well, I mean, the tests were taken, I think it was 72 hours before, but the results actually came through when they were actually at the stadium preparing to go out to do the warm-up. So, I mean, it was very, very, very late on, which in itself, I think, is quite remarkable. But again, probably an indication of, A, the number of games that these clubs are currently playing. I mean, it's one every 3 days pretty much at the moment. And B, the testing situation in this country.
So 72 hours, as you said, they'll have been in close contact effectively with all of the team across that period. And David Moyes made the point that we're being tested an awful lot. So, you can presume that the others came back negative. But, I mean, it will be interesting to see the next test whenever that is. I mean, I'd be worried if I'd been hanging out with Moyes on the bus.
Well, look, you're absolutely right. The next set of tests is going to be critical. I mean, we saw, let's go down slightly down the road, a couple of miles down the road to Leighton Orient, and they had, we're told, up to 15 positive tests,
right,
that were emerged ahead of their game with Spurs, which was cancelled. So, look, it's going to happen, and we're going to have to find a way through it. And I suspect there will be occasions this season where clubs are forced to pick teams that are largely made up of under 23 players just to fulfil their fixtures.
And as to your point about Hull almost not wanting to know, ignorance being bliss, and let's just get this fixture played, do we know if Spurs Leighton Orient is going to be refixed, or will there be a forfeit? Because that obviously could dictate behaviours.
Well, there's not been any indication yet. I think there's been a lot of goodwill around the way Spurs have dealt with that situation. They were, obviously the Justin Edinburgh connection with Leighton Orient was there already. So they were donating shirts. They were, I think, a lot of the money from the tie was going to go into Leighton Orient's coffers. All the clubs down there are suffering. And the cancellation of that fixture, I think, has cost Leighton Orient 125 grand or 150 grand, possibly, including the television money. So it's a major, major issue. I was speculating a bit on Hull City and why their motivations, but they are following EFL protocol on that. And the reality is EFL clubs cannot afford to do the same amount of testing as Premier League clubs.
Mm. To stay on West Ham for a moment, I did watch Grady Diangana score a really good goal at the weekend and think of poor Mark Noble, who tweeted not so long ago, "As captain of this football club, I am gutted, angry and sad that Grady has left. Great kid, great future." The post was liked by Declan Rice on social media as well. He is often one to put his foot in it in social media, where we can attest to that over here. So there's just a sense of disgruntlement, and the owners, David Sullivan, David Gold, I hadn't realised this actually. So they have loaned money to the club, but in August 2019, for instance, the financial year, they were paid by the club £2.9 million in interest for their loans. I mean, that is a nice sum of money to get in interest from the club that you're also running. And all of this, be it the selling of younger players, and who knows what Declan Rice's future holds as well, alongside Diangana, the selling of younger players, the money going into Sullivan and Gold's pockets, based on their loans to the club, all of this against the backdrop of, well, if we move to this new stadium, which you all hate and seem to hate more with each passing month ever since, we won't, we'll be a big club. So 4 years on now, it would seem that disgruntlement is not going away. If anything, it's going the other way. I think there was a protest, or there's some fan group have got together just utterly peeved at the whole thing. So this is not a happy camp.
No, the Golden Sullivan out campaign is very much ongoing amongst the disgruntled West Ham support. I mean, but there's no light at the end of the tunnel for those guys. I suppose the only consolation is they don't have to go and visit that stadium at the moment, although I suspect they'd like to be watching football in the flesh like all of us. But look, it's a mess there. And David Sullivan was actually on the radio today talking about the situation there. Having touched upon the COVID situation from last night, he then spoke about the sort of transfer impasse. And yeah, there is a sense of regret that a young kid of such talent in Dean Garner is sold. But the reality is that West Ham cannot shift a lot of the deadwood at that club. The likes of Yarmolenko, Filippi Anderson, Manuel Lanzini. I mean, the names trip off the tongue. There's a lot of them that they'd love to get rid of who are on huge wages and are not really justifying those salaries with performances out on the pitch. And like all clubs, up and down the spectrum, maybe apart from, you know, four or five elite right at the top, if you want to enter the transfer market at the moment, you tend to have to balance your books. And if the only player that people are coming in for is Dean Garner and offering a, you know, £18 million for a player that hasn't featured with any regularity in the Premier League, has done very well in the Championship and has clearly got an awful lot of talent, as he showed with West Brom at the weekend, then you're sort of backed into a corner. I mean, David Moyes is desperate to strengthen central defence. He wants James Tartakovsky from Burnley, but Burnley want upwards of £40 million from him, and West Ham simply don't have that money. So they have to wheel and deal, to sort of coin a Harry Redknapp-ism from a bygone era. That's the only way to operate, and it's just unfortunate the only player that West Ham could shift was one they'd rather have kept.
Last year, Hammers United were a supporters group. Over 12,000 members had protest at the ground. Like, they really hate it. You can give us a sense of this. Take the matchday experience, they said. One of the romances of going to the Boyling Ground was walking through the streets, going past the vendors, meeting in the pubs, everyone coming together as one. Those little football rituals have been lost. Now you walk through a shopping centre. As for the supposed world-class transport links, trains in and out at Stratford are often a nightmare. They go on to say later, the price for a pie and a pint is extortionate. In 2016, when they first moved in, I think the expectation was, well, you know, give this a month or two and we'll have settled in, we'll make some new memories, you know. And they've had one or two big nights there and the place was rocking, and the commentator will say, oh, this is, you know, maybe this is it. Maybe they've kind of made it their own now. It really hasn't happened.
No, it's a soulless place. It is what it is. It's a stadium that hasn't been built for football. It's not there to capture an atmosphere and like the Boleyn was. And I mean, the Boleyn was an incredible, you felt the stand rocking. You physically felt the stand rocking when West Ham scored a goal and the locals were up to it at the Boleyn. You know, to be honest, at the London Stadium, I'm just stating the obvious, everybody knows it now. You can barely see the pitch. I mean, it's a shambles. Yeah. And it'll never be home. There are loads of generations actually of West Ham supporters who will never ever accept that their home is at the London Stadium. I mean, it's because it'll never have the memories, it will never have the atmosphere that they had regularly, even when they were struggling at the Boleyn. And the only real hope, and it's sad to say it, is that you eventually get generations of West Ham supporters that don't remember that, that don't have experienced the Boleyn, don't remember what it was like. Because I can't see how else they can move on. And I found it. I've been a few times, and it's not. I've been as an away fan as well, actually, there, and it's a very, very strange experience. It's not a footballing experience, and that's such a shame, because West Ham, you know, at the Boleyn at Upton Park was a proper old school football stadium.
So to round off that chat, COVID crisis has hit. The fans utterly detest their new ground, and they always will, and there's no getting out of it. The owners, and I'm not even sure about the ethics of loaning to your own club and then taking interest, are, you know, despised. And there's dead wood on the playing staff that they can't get rid of. Other than that, though?
Well, they've lost their first two games, and I think their first seven fixtures this season in the league are against teams that they gleaned 0 points from the corresponding games last season from as well. Look, mate, it's
grim.
I still think they've got enough. They've still got enough to survive. It's just like, I don't see how they progress.
Yeah, it's purgatory.
Yeah.
Is Declan Rice going to go, by the way?
I think that Chelsea will really test West Ham's resolve before the end of the transfer window. Chelsea have signed their goalkeeper now, in Edouard Mondi. He's in, and it's that defensive midfield and cover at centre half that they need. And look, Declan Rice is a player that Frank Lampard loves and wants back at the club. It will take an awful lot of money to do it, but Chelsea are splashing cash like there's no tomorrow anyway, so they may well push the boat out and see what it will take to wrest him away from West Ham. But to be honest, I mean, we think that the locals are in mutiny now. What once Declan Rice leaves, or if Declan Rice leaves, then West Ham will see proper fury there, because there may not be enough time for them to bring in the players that would replace him in this window.
Mm. We're talking to Dominic Fifield, who writes for The Athletic, covers London football in particular. On Chelsea, I mean, the money they're spending really is quite eye-catching. Like, Frank Lampard will be judged massively on this season, you suspect, by Roman Abramovich as much as by everyone. I'm sure you've been there and watched Kepa since he arrived for £71 million. Can you pinpoint a moment where this started to go wrong for Kepa? Has it been gradual? I mean, it's just, you know, so Mendy has signed. This is the end for Kepa. It has been quite extraordinary what's happened here.
Yeah, look, I think it was a... I don't think he ever really illuminated Chelsea. I don't think he ever convinced in a way like Alisson or Edison did at City and Liverpool. He looked like potential for a long time. And then I think possibly under Sarri that the performances dipped steadily. And then we all remember the League Cup and the refusal to come off the pitch, which looked like an open challenge to the management at the time. And to be honest, it's never been convincing since. I think we don't want to go over old ground with him, because it's starting to feel cruel. I'm starting to feel sorry for the fella, but I mean, he's obviously suffering a huge crisis of confidence. I think there are technical flaws there as well. I've spoken to a couple of goalkeeping experts, former goalkeepers who've watched him play, and he has this inclination for his arms to, when he's preparing to make a save, his arms will sort of fling backwards, so he's always slightly behind when he brings them forward to claim the ball, and it's costing the ball sort of squirm under his arms. I think, well, there was a goal earlier this season that did exactly that, the Brighton game, and I think there are technical flaws and confidence issues. And to be honest with you, to take him out the firing line now after those two performances in the Premier League, it's about right. It was the only logical thing for Lampard to do. I don't know whether Edouard Mondi is going to be good enough to be a title-winning goalkeeper. I think it's going to be very, very interesting to see how he does, because I'm told that there's an error in him as well. But but the reality is that Chelsea can't go out and buy Jan Oblak because they don't have that kind of money. They're not bringing in somebody who's at the Alisson and Edison level. So we've seen the impact having a world-class goalkeeper had at those two clubs, at City and Liverpool, and Chelsea aren't there yet. So it may well be that Mondi proves to be a stopgap until they can raise the funds to get an Oblak in.
Based on the money, though, that they are spending alone, it does feel like there's been a rejuvenation in Abramovich's attitude to the club. Difficult to know how much pressure is now suddenly on Lampard given the money spent.
I think you have to be a bit careful on that to assume that this is a sort of return to the ridiculous spending of the middle of the last decade. They're obviously building on a slightly higher base now, I think. But bear in mind, they didn't spend for two transfer windows. They really, ostensibly, I know that Pulisic and Kovacic came in, but essentially, they didn't spend money in those two windows. And they have raised money with the $143 million they got through for Eden Hazard and the $50 million for Alvaro Morata. Pretty remarkable transfers when you see the sort of trajectories potentially of those two careers in the last 6 months or so. So there's a large pool of money there. Plus, they are backed by a billionaire with bottomless pockets who, if he does fancy going out and buying a player for £70 million from the Bundesliga, isn't necessarily going to put the kibosh on it. You know, he'll go and do it. It also reflects the reality that they very much were a team that was over 30 points behind the champions last season. They did well to finish in the top four, you could argue, in that difficult season, given they hadn't been active in the market and they'd lost their best player. But they needed to do something to remain in contention. And Chelsea ultimately have to be playing Champions League football. The business model that it is needs that influx of television monies and broadcasting right money. So they had to do something dramatic this window to sort of catch up. Yeah. And has been dramatic, but that's not to say it will necessarily work. I mean, Havertz has scored a hat-trick tonight against Barnsley, but that's Barnsley from the Championship. We haven't won a game there this season in the league, and Havertz has been off the pace in the two Premier League matches so far. All these guys are going to take a while to settle in. Thiago Silva played an hour tonight. He presumably is going to be a mainstay of this defence over the season ahead. But this is a process. It's going to take, you know, weeks and possibly months for these guys to bed in and show what they can properly do. So it's very interesting. And that you're right, the pressure will mount on Lampard. He has to impress and challenge and show progress.
Dominic, just one very last quick point. I've only got about kind of 30, 40 seconds. Sorry to put you under time pressure, but I'm just curious. The Dele Alli situation from, you know, golden boy to now seemingly available to, if you're willing to pay the money. Is there an issue with his attitude? Is it off the pitch? Is it just, somebody struggling for, I don't know, confidence or form and doing his damnedest to try and retrieve it? What's the word on Dele Alli?
I think confidence, definitely. Fitting in, buying into what Mourinho wants. I think, to be honest, if you've seen any of the Amazon documentaries, even the first episode, you could look at it and think, oh, this isn't going to work. Mm. For all that Mourinho was saying how much he loves him, he's also telling him that he needs to back up his ideas. And it just, even from that, you look at it and think there's possibly a bit of a personality clash here in the making. And I think it's just being played out. I think Bale will probably occupy the position that Dele Alli would want to play in, and it wouldn't surprise me if an eye-catching loan offer came in. I know there's been a bit of distance between the sort of Paris Saint-Germain rumours and Spurs, but if that was offered and Spurs could recoup a bit of money for the short term and then welcome back Dele Alli at some point in the future when he's more confident, he's been playing more regularly, maybe scoring goals, then maybe they'd look at it.
Mm. This didn't seem on the cards when he burst on the scene. We'll watch with interest. Dominic Fifield from The Athletic. Thanks so much, Dominic. Appreciate it.
Pleasure. Thank you.
Football on Off the Ball.
With Paddy Power. More confident than United before a Europa League final. Gamble responsibly. See dunleary.net.